This morning's presentation will be given by member Bruno Sahut. And please note, he didn't really get dressed up just for us this morning, but he officiated at a wedding at 10 o'clock this morning. So that's why he's all dolled up. Bruno was born in France and moved to Canada in 1981. He and Helen Christensen met on holiday in Tunisia in 1976. Have been together ever since. They married in 1981 so Bruno could emigrate to Canada. Bruno has been a marriage commissioner for about 6 years. In an average year, he marries about 15 couples. He has another to do this afternoon, apparently. And Bruno is, of course, our current lay chaplain. Bruno.
Thank you, everybody. 1876 was good, too. We look so young. But I would have dressed up anyway. But I did have a wedding, was a referral from somebody who I married on the 1st of February. That was for the Chinese New Year, and they were another Chinese couple. Thank you. To quote Otomo no Yakamishi, "Better never to have met you in my dream than to wake and reach hands that are not there." Seldom in life are we encouraged to express our inner beauty and tear the extraordinary out of the exceptional. 7 years ago, I decided to give back the mystery of the imaginary, to be the alchemist of one of the most extraordinary life events, your weddings. "I Do Wed You" was born, and this is how we met. Ladies and gentlemen, on this February 14th, we are gathered to celebrate our love and commitment to each other. Let us embark in the love boat of some of my guests' adventure in love and commitment. Yes, give me double vision. I will start with Kyle and Simon's wedding, and it's called, basically, Hairless, a counter. They met innocently online. Oh, all these particular papers I wrote, because I asked the people I'm going to marry, or the couple I'm going to marry, if they would like me to tell a story about how they met. Most of them, 99.9%, said yes, we don't mind. But sometimes, like if I do a wedding a few days later, I don't have time to prepare everything. But in this particular case, I did. So here we are. They met innocently online, as many future couples do these days. A dating website, that is. No smoky or boozy bar, late night adventures, no bus stops. "Can you hold my grocery bag on a rainy day? Please and thank you." No old-fashioned miscommunication. Everything 21st century. "You look cute. You look cute too. When can we see each other, eh?" Simon was looking at the blank screen, as Carl did not have a picture to make it look at his best. And despite his friend's warning not to do it, for 2 weeks, he texted Kyle. "How are you doing?" "I'm fine. When can you see each other?" "Soon." Finally, after these 2 weeks, they met and stayed together for a month, until such a time Kyle had to go away for a year to Saskatoon to finish his vet schooling. Simon, almost starting knitting, but had to stop from pricking himself too many times and falling asleep. Now, as you may or may not know, Simon is an expert in computer science, not in needlework. As for Kyle, he knew the very moment he saw Simon's profile and picture on the website that Simon was his God-sent love. It was serendipity at first sight. "I don't want to lose him." And he was devastated when he had to leave for Saskatoon. Thanks goodness, to smartphones. When Kyle came back from Saskatoon, he found Simon behind a pile of sweater and scarf, preparing for lovers' welcome back dinner. After dinner, Simon looked at Kyle in the eyes and said, "I'm allergic to fur." Kyle rose from the table and asked Simon to follow him into the bathroom, where he quickly undressed, took up a tube of hair remover and a tiny applicator from the medicine cabinet, and holding them to Kyle said, "Wax me, baby, I'm yours." And Simon to answer, cat fur, you silly baboon. At this point, Kyle knelt before Simon, opened a small jewelry box and said, "Would you marry me?" Simon squeezed the hair remover tube, dropped the tiny applicator, "Yes," and the rest is history, even for Kyle's cat, which so happened was walking by Simon when all this happened. So it's a hairless cat. The next one I would like to tell you is what is called fairy tale. And that's from Patrick and Lena. Now I changed, obviously, the names. And the book that's going to produce will be edited. This, I didn't have the edited version yet, so this is still my French, English. Now, it all started at Patrick and Lena's wedding. Now, it all started a long time ago. If it sounds like a fairy tale, looks like a fairy tale, then it must be a fairy tale. With enchanted forest, maybe one or two flame-throwing dragons, magic wands galore, tear, fate, and destiny, maybe. That evening, after a hard work's day, Patrick the carpenter, tool belt and walking boots in hand, slowly walked up the stairs of Bushwacker, Regina Favorite Waterhall. He was to meet his two favorite buddies, brother John and sister Lululemon. Unbeknown to Patrick the carpenter, he was going to be confronted with the toughest challenge in his entire life. Her name was Faith. No, not this one, the other one. As his right foot reached the first landing, he stopped and almost fell to his knees. The sun was shining directly into his eye, only to be obscured by the apparition glowing of a surrounding light. "Is it possible? Am I dreaming?" were his almost exact words. Slowly regaining consciousness, he walked through the squeaky salon door. Bang, bang, bang. He approached the bar. Now, and only now did he have a better view of the goddess that momentarily blinded him. "Hi, my name is Patrick." "Hi, Patrick. My name is Lana. How do you do?" That night, Patrick dreamed of Lana, and for a reason unknown to him and his kindergarten teacher, he imagined Lena as a unicorn. From now on, she will become his unreachable quest. Meanwhile, Goddess Lana was inquiring about this knight in shaving armor. Now I put shaving in quote because obviously he's a carpenter. So he's got a lot of shavings everywhere. "Oh no, he's married. That's not fair. All the good ones are always taken. Destiny, oh destiny, be merciful and grant me my wish." Poof, poof, poof. Destiny one wand went to work. Free at last. Free. He is free at last. "Thank you, Destiny." "Free at last, I am," said Patrick, swallowing his cold coffee and reading his morning mail at the corner table of his one-bedroom apartment. "Why did I do to be so lucky? My unicorn, my goddess, your mind." "Not so fast. Hold your horses, young man," said Lana. "I need a castle." And a wish was once again granted with three whooshes. Whoosh one, whoosh two, whoosh three. A small house in the prairie in need of repairs in exchange for home-cooked meals. Patrick, our carpenter, was too happy to oblige. He beats the soup kitchen every time. To earn his daily ration, our carpenter worked hard, maybe too hard. He tried to push his luck, invited his unicorn to be a brother. Flowers, French-speaking service, oh la la, and Belgian chocolate. Lana accepted this time, but turned down the other attempts. "Would you like to go out with me again?" "No," said Lana. "Oh yeah?" said Patrick. "No again." "Oh yeah? No." a selfie then? No. He tried and tried again, up to the point that the NSA took pity on him every time. And that's the US, yeah. The NSA took pity on him every time they had to stamp his mail return to sender. That wasn't to last. It was a ruse. Aha, clever Anna. She called Patrick. I'll come over for dinner and a sleepover if you behave. Oh, yeah? Yes. Then I promise I will be a gentleman. Okay. Then Leonard shut a cell phone up. That afternoon, Patrick went to a buying frenzy. Pasta, meatballs, and red wine. Did I forget something? Oh, yeah. Tomato sauce, plenty of it in a movie. Lana was on schedule. It was a feast, not quite a Babbitt's feast, but to the point of a giggly Lana. She removed her socks. Patrick put his romantic evening on, movie on, Zen of the Art of the Motorcycle Maintenance. Kiss me, ordered Lana, the right arm around his neck. Oh, no, not now. This is the best part when he goes to the restaurant with his girl. And, oh, yeah? No. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Do you smoke? No. I wear the patch. I'm self. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. When he woke up, his apartment was a mess. Meatballs everywhere, pasta sauce in the bathroom, wall punctured. No, I won't go there. Patrick the gentleman. No sign of Lana, but a note. I'm in Calgary visiting my grandma. I'll be back in a week. Sometime a week seems to last an eternity. On December 9, 2013, Lana had a standing invitation to attend a magical evening to see Sleeping Beauty at the Globe Theatre. A good friend, Kate, took her around the theatre, and he was there, backstage. White tuxedo, black top hat, on bending knee, right hand extended. Lana, would you marry me? The next one I'm going to mention to you, and I'm checking the time. Thank you. It's Samantha and Connor, and this is their wedding, and I call it the Year of the Monkey. Imagine you're sitting at the edge of your seat, watching what promised to be an exciting slow-pitched baseball game. On my left, the whole boy teams. On my right, you have guessed correctly, the old girls team. Oh, did I miss the... Sorry. Oh, no, it's jump one. So it was Samantha and Connor, Canon version of Field of Dreams. So imagine, again, you're sitting at the edge of your seats watching what promised to be an exciting slow-pitch baseball game. On my left, the boys, and on my right, as you may have guessed again, the old girls' team. Six on each side, looking ferocious and sizing each other's strengths. At the top of the left corner of the field, a small patch of forever manicured Saskatoon berry field, hissing in the gentle afternoon breeze. Remember, this is the Canadian version, not the American with the maize and so on. The tension in the air is electrifying your old body. Boys and girls checked and rechecked each other, and they are ready to call. Who on first? What on second? I know. Half of Connor's team said to him, she is free. In the bullpen, some excruciating dilemma. He is too good looking to be single, were Samantha's almost last word. But where did I put my beep beep glove? Where? Samantha is dressed for the part. Blonde, dyed hair flowing freely in the prairie wind, neon-colored me windbreaker, aviator-shaped sunglasses, a beep-beep stock glove. I put beep-beep because I censored the word. Glove stuck in the back pocket and baseball bat in hand. She scored hit after hit. And was she ever loud about it? She was outstanding, and Connor tried to keep her to keep up with his eyes shooting burning love arrows like one spits some flower seeds. Half time comes, not a minute too soon. Connor and Samantha pick up their smartphone and ogle each other's Facebook account. Oh, he changes status to Casanova. From Casanova to single and good looking. Oh ho, oh, she changed her me status to single and good looking. How original. Time to go back to the field. Was it Samantha's constant swearing or Connor's everlasting rough look that prompted Samantha a late afternoon of 2008 to jump into Connor's truck and start smoking what could have been a LeBron-approved, funny-looking, homemade, pot-smelling cigarette? You could go back to my place. We could go back to my place and watch one of my movies, asked Connor innocently. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. I prefer women. I don't like guys, was Samantha's answer to Connor's soft advances. Then, out of the blue, tainted, cloudy air, Connor had his own famous last word. Get out of my truck, slamming the pickup door behind him as he gentlemanly stepped out. When he got back to his truck, that was it, he thought. I lost my dream catcher. This is the end. Not so fast, said Destiny, dream catcher's girlfriend. A couple of weeks later, Samantha, who didn't want to divulge his true feeling, invited him for an unforgettable dinner. She spared no expenses. Put a bag of garlic cloves to spice a favorite festive dish, guacamole a la erotica, famous Spanish tango arrangement, avocado galore, a jar of saffron, cold-pressed extra virgin oil, olive oil, finely crushed ground pepper and a teaspoon of ginger on a bed of smooth pureed garlic. To die for. As she crushed away a last garlic clove, Connor knocked at the door. Knock, knock, who is there? Connor who? Who went first? Come on in, everything is ready. The next day around 2 p.m., after a stormy night, and when Connor finally came back to life, Samantha's true vocation flashed before eyes like a shooting star over Saskatoon blueberry field, baseball field. No, I'm not Martha Stewart. If I'm not Martha Stewart, I can at least keep him alive. Alcacer, dear? 1 year later, almost to the day, Connor, 2013 February, last-minute Christmas shopping center spree came to a sudden halt when he spotted the perfectly engineered ideal proposal arrangement. A baseball glove with a 2 million carat blue diamond ring on its thumb. On second thought, who wears a wedding ring arrangement on their thumb? Sitting on the carpet in their living room, Connor asked Samantha to wear a new pair of tailored soft tan leather Christmas gift gloves. After a couple of tries, she removed the ring from the glove, set it into her finger, and looked intensely into Connor's water eye. Samantha, would you marry me? The next one. Again, this is the stories I tell when I do the weddings and based on what one may give me as the information that they met and fall in love. The next one I do have is called The Year of the Monkey, my apologies. So 2005, for the first time, Regina John laid eye on Amanda the Adventuress. Their first encounter will unfortunately remain hidden, as neither of them remember exactly how it ended. It all started at night around a campfire, playing guitar, singing, and eating relatively innocent marshmallows. No smoking, though. They assured me no smoking, just campfire heavy vapors, just warm, comforting, healing flames, they say. But how would they know? They don't remember. Hey? The second time Regina Joan met met Amanda the adventuress. They don't remember either. They went to a party and blank. Smoothing vapors again. This is bizarre. Were they abducted by short tail, big eyeballs, sacred tie tampon alien monkeys? We're not sure, but both, it seems, were reported glowing in the dark and walking about midnight in some farmer's field around Cal Robert, west of Saskatoon. Or were they discovered hovering above our own Wascana Lake late on Halloween night as the full moon was howling, "Howl! Howl!" Are this type of strange happening in... Are there any type of strange happening in the Saskatchewan High Plains every time they burn in, they bump into each other? Or is it Regina John's chemistry set, Magic Potion 101 from beginners, his Nana gave him at a very young age, that is behind this out-of-this-world phenomenon? One way or another, they went to meet 3 years later in 2008. They were to meet again 3 years later in 2008 when Amanda the Adventuress and Regina Joan drove to Calgary to pick up a mutual friend in dear need of a Canadian best friend's assistance. It could have been an easy and uneventful drive. What in the world could happen when you drive a straight line from Regina to Calgary? Nothing, eh? Unless you drive on the highway to destiny. Not this one, the other one. And what a destiny. Regina Highway number 1, 16th Avenue. And Regina Joan turned left abruptly, takes the fast lane on Deerfoot Trail South, quickly redirecting Amanda the Adventuress into Memorial Drive West, against the traffic and towards the Calgary Zoo, where all the monkeys were jumping joyfully up and down, full of anticipation and looking forward to see Regina Joan again. Suddenly, in the middle of Memorial Drive, on the watchful eye of the entire police traffic division, the entire Calgary police traffic division, Regina Joan made a sharp U-turn on two wheels, marking his tires in the process and getting his bearing back. He is now relaxed, safely driving on the right path to the airport with unshakable and undisturbed Amanda the Adventuress on its side. Amazingly enough, this incident was never reported, nor made the 6 o'clock news. For an unexplainable reason, many police officers were treated for laryngitis and hand blisters for what could only be medically described as overcheering and clapping while the mysterious white cloud slowly dissipated over Memorial Drive. 5 years ago, on August 15, 2010, Regina Joan asked Amanda the Adventuress if he could go with him. "I don't know," said Amanda. "Let me think. I'm wondering what in the name of your golden monkey I've been doing for the last 5 years. Yes, you silly banana." But Regina Joan, who over time has learned his lesson, knew deep inside him that what sounded like a thundering ultimatum, and quickly and magically, abracadabra, pulled out the plastic ring of that he purchased that very morning at the dollar store game box. And he was right near the floor, tenderly asked Amanda the Adventuress, "Would you marry me?" I hope you're not falling asleep. Thank you. The next one I do have, and I may be short, cutting short on this because Helen said only 20 minutes, and we're getting close to the 20 minutes. I'm going to jump a bit and read the last three I have on my text. This one is called "An Angel Gets His Wings." Maestro, no music, please. This is a solemn moment. It's not a fairy tale, but Oops. Pardon my French. The wedding is between Harry and Tim. But it could be very well be. A long, very long time ago, some of you weren't born yet. That's how long it was. Regina was known as the best of two cities divided by a railroad in a rough neighborhood called the North End. Timothy and Harry were teenagers in the North End. They had big dreams as each of them stood proudly on top of a hillside. I won't tell you which one. They diligently stood their ground and soon were married with children. Sounds familiar to me. And that could have been the end of the story, but no, there is more. At 18, still a teenager, Harry realized he was attracted to his own gender and to none other than Tim. It was like a revelation and a sucking magnet effect. He never told anyone. You don't know what it is to live in the North End of the city, roughing and toughing as you may have seen it on reality TV. There was no Patsy Jack or no Vanna White, no Wheel of Fortunes, no sorry, just family feuds. So when Harry met his beautiful wife, he moved away to a different comfort zone. That was to last forever until. And then his life took a sharp U-turn towards his stairway to heaven. Still no music, please. When Harry turned 40, he no longer lived his life in a Christmas festive. When Harry turned 40, he could no longer live his life, and on a Christmas festive week, he was walking in a Cold War center like a snake zombie. Have you ever saw a snake zombie? It's pretty ugly. Nose dripping, really, really bad hair day, eyesight 1 out of 20, arms dangling down, overrun by a shoddy sweater, raggedy soles sweeping on the floor. What an image of despair. Even the Salvation Army guy took pity on him and gave him $5. Suddenly, coming from nowhere, appeared an angel who, this very late afternoon on Christmas Eve, received his wings. I still can hear the bells. Tingling, tingling, ting-tang-dong. Bless Saint John. And I can assure you without whom Harry would not have been with us tonight. Timothy took him into his strong arm. Literally, picked him, lifted him upon his shoulder and said, I had my eyes on you for quite some time. Let me take you home. Later, 15 years ago, on the 31st of May, to the day to be precise, Harry met Timothy at the restaurant and said, Garçon, give me whatever the other guy is having. I want the same thing. Actually, now you know the rest of the story. I do have also what I call the Flintstone. And it is Colin and Colin. Basically, it could be Colin and Colin, depending on the way you spell it. That one afternoon, and because one of them is transgender, one late afternoon, the owner of the Abadabu Cavern moved away and his waterhole dried out. Colin and Colin lost contact and most of their friends. One day, 100 million and 20 years later, they met again. They weren't wearing the same latest fashion from back then, although ostrich feather hat, beaver skin shorts, crocodile dandy cap, muskrat dresses, latest lizard, camouflage, eggshell bra, personalized hunting club, and carving knives. So when Colin saw Colin dating one of her long, hot, old friends, she said to Colin, do I know you from somewhere, someplace, from a long, long time ago? No, said Colin, trying to look as innocent as and angelic as possible. You look familiar. Are you sure? "Yes, it is I," Colin said, succumbing once again to Colin's charm. That was such a long time ago. As he moved closer to Colin, "How could you remember me or recognize me? I'm not dressed the same. I know, and you used to piss me off too. But I forgive you. Anyway, these beaver shorts didn't suit you. And how can I forget your sweet face, your bulging muscles, and your legendary private French club collection, and your beautiful heart? They would have dated forever and ever if it hasn't been for Colin's romantic words. How do you feel about kids? Eh? Eh? And, look, guess what in my jewelry box? No, not this one, you perverts. The other one, all dressed up with shining diamonds." So in the end, Colin and Colin and their children settled in a large bungalow with a personalized trophy cave for two. And the last one I would like to mention is Connie and Blair. An early, cold and gloomy morning in November 2007, in order to further their studies on institutionalized incarceration, a group of science students were invited to the Prince Albert Penitentiary. As it is customary, they were tagged for good measure, asked not to wander around, to stick together, to take notes, and to hold their questions until the end of the tour. They weren't allowed to take pictures as per strict prison policy, in case these pictures made it to YouTube. It could have ended there, or just after they locked the door outside, turning the lights off after the last student left the building. Still that day, something unusual happened, as one could hear feathers ruffling the bench, talon scratching the press, and an eagle calling in the distance behind the double glazed gym window. Connie stopped in her steps and listened. She couldn't see at first, and then, as she walked so even slowly past the gym room, she saw someone whose hands were lifting huge weights, up and down, and she watched what seems to be a large, large wingspan open, looking to take flight through the ceiling and into the Saskatchewan sky. Someone whose chest was pushing out of silent inner scream for outside air. Someone whose piercing eyes were calling for freedom, for love, her love. Wow. Did time really stop for that were to be a precious second? That morning she took notes. Not a regular class note, but wrote what she saw and heard. Help me. Free me. And she could feel the earthly mother's heart beating into the shrieking cords of a trapped eagle. The doors of the penitentiary were slammed shut and the light turned off behind her after she stepped out in the open air. Soon after her visit, Blair received a letter from this riveting and strange woman wanted to know more about him. After 2.5 years out of my first year sentence, would I be able to see you when I'm done? Yes, said Connie. 2.5 years later, Blair was finally let go, and his wings, while quite rusty after 4 years of confinement, were able to fly him to Regina, where she was waiting on the stepper. She was waiting on the step of the front door and took him under his wing to start a new journey together. The sun will set towards infinity and tomorrow dawn will rise towards eternity. It is time to seal our love and commitment to each other. Happy Valentine's Day to all of you, and thank you.
you, Bruno.
I wonder if any of you would have a story to tell about how you might have met your partner, or...
Helen goes first.
Made that proposal, or...
I don't know if I... Oh, is this on?
Yes.
I don't know if I can answer the question. Bruno and I met in Tunisia in 1976 when we were on holiday. But what I wanted to say, and I think it's very important, first of all those stories, those are true stories. I'm just amazing. I bet you, you know, if we went around here, we'd be here all day just telling our stories. But there's one thing that I'm very, very proud of. Bruno is a marriage commissioner, decided to become a marriage commissioner because of something that happened when, how many years ago was that, Bruno? I don't know. 2009, when somebody refused to marry a gay couple. And that is why Bruno became a marriage commissioner. Now, he will marry mixed couples as well, but, you know, but that was what provoked him to do that, because he thought it was such an injustice, and I'm so proud of him.
Good for Bruno. Any stories to tell or questions of Bruno? If not?
Well, this is not very romantic, but Donna and I met in German class, and she was very upset at me because I kept asking at 8 o'clock in the morning whether I had the pronunciation correct. And I think the only way I finally got into her heart was I carried her books home.
A retort.
Well, it wasn't the German books, because I hated German with a passion. But then we also had our first year at university, we had political science together, and that was at 11 o'clock. And so his dorm was in the same direction as the co-op house that I was living in. And at that point, even though I thought he was a real, at that time the word was schnook, because he liked German, I thought, if he'll carry my books, that's okay.
Very romantic, right?
You bet.
I was thinking one of your first stories, your type of how everyone meets online now these days. My current partner, Kim, right now, the first time I met her was in person. We were at a mutual friend's party, and but she didn't really talk to me at all because she was spending time looking on her phone for matches. And I had just been thinking about doing it myself, so 2 days later I signed up and I put in my profile and everything and hit the button to see who my best match would be, and she popped up.
Amazing.
I think it's very fitting that Bruno did this presentation, and he's from France, you know, and the whole sort of mystery and myth, perhaps. I don't know, maybe it's not a myth, but, you know, the French know all about romance, and that Paris is, in particular, which is where you grew up, I believe, in Paris, is a very romantic city. And it actually is. I was fortunate enough to go there, and it's just, it's beautiful. And I guess when we're in love, everything is beautiful. And then I also think that, you know, relationships, of course, go through that period of, you know, where everything's that sort of like the unicorn world and a fantasy and is beautiful. And then a lot of people really don't know how to cope when they start to discover differences and difficulties, and they often don't know how to cope with that and give up quite early, I think, these days. But who knows?
Wonderful. Thank you very much, and thank you, Bruno.